Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
At Sleep Outfitters Outlet, great sleep is a big deal. Save 40 to 60% every day on every Sealy, Stearns & Foster, and Tempur-Pedic. Queens as low as $249. Customer exchanges, closeouts, and floor samples. Inventory changes daily, so come in for your dream deal today. With no credit needed financing, expert advice, and up to 60% off retail, it's never been easier to get the sleep and savings you deserve. Go to sleepoutfittersoutlet.com for financing details and to find a store near you.
You're listening to Pop, the History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Welcome back to part two of this interview with Orff of Ace of Base. Later, he talks about the attack on Jenny and the resulting fallout. But first, back to what he said at the end of part one.
I'm going to unpack that a little bit because there's a few things there. First of all, rejection. Creative person, rejection is very hard.
The way you tell it,
I know you've told these stories probably a million times in your career. And I'm not saying they change over time, but they become easier to tell. I've been there, you know, I do that as well. And you've told it in a way that rejection didn't matter. You just got up and moved on and did something. But doesn't rejection hurt? Isn't rejection really hard? You want to achieve something. You wanted to be a successful band, and you're getting knocked down and even told, basically, don't ever contact us again.
Yeah, it was like they put up the chainsaw, right? So, yeah. Completely said we were completely talent and had no talent. It was horrible. I think it comes down a little bit to youth, I think, because when you're young, you're very naive, and some weird self-confidence that I have really hard to, because I tried to find the formula to get this self-confidence, because if I had that formula, I could maybe teach it to people. But we just had this weird self-confidence that we are good and they are wrong. And it's very hard to say why, because I mean, even Jonah's parents and my parents, they didn't like our music. Jonah's sisters didn't like the music. So it was only Jonas and I who liked the music. But we were so stubborn. We were so stubborn and naive and said, everyone is wrong and we are right. And I don't really have a good answer. Trust me, I've tried to find the formula how we can get so stupidly stubborn, but without that stubbornness, we wouldn't have the band today or then either, right? So I'm very thankful for being so stubborn, but to answer your question, I don't know.
Yeah, the other thing that you mentioned, yeah. I mean, the mid-80s, 85, Sten Hallström made a statement about remixes and how Sweden could contribute. And this was sort of the basis of where Sweemix came up and where Dennis Pop and, of course, then Telegram being associated. with that. You were in Gothenburg, but weren't you aware of this sort of movement that was happening in Stockholm at the time?
We were aware of the things. We had a few DJs in Gothenburg who were in some kind of, you know, they were in championships in Europe and they were winning. So they had a, they had knowledge of what's going on around Europe. I don't think we were so much aware of what's going on underground in Stockholm specifically. I think I knew more about Düsseldorf music because of the Klingklang studio, or maybe the London underground music style, you know, than I listened to Sweden. Well, there was a few bands in Stockholm that was great that we followed. They were actually all signed to, at that time, a record company called Stranded that was owned by the same owner that had a Telegraph. So that's, we had some kind of a connection with the kind of synth new wave in Sweden. However, we were looking much more to UK on music influences and a little bit of Germany too, rather than Stockholm. So we didn't know really what was going on, except for these few bands that came out in Swedish in from Stockholm.
Now, the other thing is, and this is a little bit of a joke by me, but with Dennis Pop having the CD and it, you know, playing endlessly revolving in his car, you know, I talked to Raz, of Robin Raz, recently, and he told me exactly the same story about his father and a track that was playing his car. So what is wrong with Swedish cars?
Yeah, this was, I think this was not a Swedish car. I think it was an American car, this one. The stereo was Japanese for sure. Yes, that's a good question. What's wrong with the cars? Did they get stuck? But I think we both Robin Raz and Ace of Base can be very happy that some of the stereo system breaks down sometimes.
Well, moving on from that, Dennis Pop, he obviously created, in a sense, then the sound that was Ace of Base. How did that sound diverge from the original demos that you had created with Jonas?
So Dennis Pop's magic fingers was not to add anything. It was actually to erase things, to minimalize things, simplify things. And that was his very unique talent. I mean, Dennis Pop couldn't play any instruments, but he had a very good ear. So basically the first thing he did with all our songs that we worked with him was actually basically to take out 50% of the melodies. Boom, out, gone. And some melodies, for example, some of the melodies that we had in Ola Siobhan's that we had to take out from the track became Happy Nation later on. So it was not like they completely disappeared. Some of the tracks, some of the hook lines, we ended up in songs later on. But he simplified things. And also he was amazing when it came to doing drum beats. And this is also from a technical point of view. We were working with a program called Cubase, and Cubase grooves were not very groovy. It was very stiff, very computerized. Dennis Pop was working with Logic, which they had a little error in the sync clock. So it actually, the grooves moved around a little bit. So it was much better and easier to do good grooves with this program. We didn't work at all the same way. We worked very different. So when he obviously completely killed all our drums, everything, and we built it up from scratch. And he just had his magic finger for what actually worked both on radio and in the dance floor. And also another thing that was very helpful was that he played every evening in different nightclubs. So you can take the demo tape, go to the nightclub, test it live, check out what part did work and what didn't work, because you see the audience, how they react, and then go back to the studio afterwards and change these parts and add something and then test it again. So we went back and forth and tested it live, how what was working, which was incredible to actually have that tool at hand. And that's really how Dennis Pop created the perfect rhythms and the build-up of songs and so forth that became the famous Swedish sound, Cherian sound.
I mean, the famous Swedish sound, I mean, you were so successful and in the States, which was not usual at that time at all. How did you come to the attention of America?
Yeah, well, that's also an interesting story because after conquering, well, Nordics with Mega Records, and we started to work with Polygram, which is now Universal, in Europe and UK. Of course, UK for us was an enormous market, and we were very flattered that actually it started to play on top 10, and we started to do Top of the Pops and all that stuff. And of course, you know what, MTV, not forget MTV, that without MTV, I'm not sure we would have the success, because MTV just picked up All She Wants and started to play it so much. And through MTV, different channels in Europe, and of course also in America. But when it comes to America specifically, Clive Davis, who is probably still today the biggest legend in record industry, had this record company called Arista Record, which our record company, little record company in Denmark, really wanted to work with him. He founded so many different bands over the years. And we were rejected 3 times by Clive. He didn't like the music, he couldn't see the fit in America and so forth. And then the summer 93, he was in Europe, and he was on a boat, and he was in Spain, and then in France, and then in Italy. And everywhere he went, on restaurants, nightclub, radio, bars, they all played All the Jones, or actually a Happy Nation as well at that time. So he was very surprised to hear that everywhere, how big impact we had in Europe. So when he came back to New York, apparently there's a lot, was a few DJs who had picked up the songs when they were touring and played in Europe, like in Ibiza and south of France and Greece and so forth, picked up All the Jones, and they started to play it on radio in America. So we started to kind of bubble on some lists in America, and he was reading about it. And then he made a decision to actually sign us up, but it took a few years for him to say no, say no, say no. And then he realized, I probably should actually get onto the train. Of course, his version is that he immediately heard that we were a success, but that's not really the full true story. And then, of course, he did a fantastic job reforming a little bit, because, I mean, we were kind of surprised working in America. It's very different from Europe, obviously. And fame in America is on a completely different level you have kind of a little bit of a star, larger than life thing in the UK, but in Sweden, we don't really have that stuff. And I'm very happy that we were from Gotham. We're very simple people. But in America, you could become so big when you're famous, right? So they really lift you up in the sky. And if you believe the hype, you are in trouble. I think we were lucky that we kind of had our foot on the ground. But Clive said, I need more singles, otherwise I won't release the album. And we had that time already sold 7 million albums and released like 5 singles that were hits. And we said, Clive, we just started to record our second album now. So you better release the first one, otherwise you're gonna miss the second one. No, I'm not releasing any albums here and no singles before I have 2 more hits. Wow. And that was a tough discussion with him, trust me. But of course he was right. Came to Stock to Gothenburg, and he was listening to songs that we were preparing for the second album, and he picked 4 songs, and 2 of them is The Sign, and the second album was supposed to be called The Sign, and then it was Don't Turn Around, and they became obviously very big hits in America. And when we got that, he said, now we have the album, now we have the hit, now we go. And then after that, we sold 25 million albums instead. So he was right, even though it didn't make sense at all for us in the beginning, but that was a very healthy, unusual argument that we had.
Success brings many different things. You mentioned fame, and you mentioned that Sweden deals with it slightly differently. Fame brings enormous attention. It brings pressures. And if you're in a band, it brings interpersonal pressures in the band. It brings a lot of money, and that money, although it's, you know, would be wonderful to earn a lot of money, on the other side, there's also the pressure of dealing with that money. And also as a band, there was a negative aspect that Ace of Base were, and it's a little bit like ABBA were at the beginning, they weren't treated really seriously as musicians at the beginning. And over time, that seems to have changed. But how did all those pressures sort of affect the relationships within the band?
Yeah, that's a few questions in one question. If I start with the critics of the Swedish, well, of our music, I think the main critics came from Sweden. However, there was probably critics everywhere, of course, but I think in America, we got a very good, had a lot of good press for the music because they thought it was so unique. And I think the American society can actually appreciate when you are unique and so forth. But in Sweden, we had a very similar story to ABBA, that they really killed us in media in Sweden. They said basically the same thing that the record companies have said, that we were the worst thing ever came out. They were ashamed they were Swedish. Somebody described our music that it was like somebody who had thrown rotten spaghetti in the face, kind of that level of criticism in Sweden. So we basically stopped reading Swedish newspapers because it was nothing good in it at all. I think around the world, it kind of became more of a positive phenomena with the pop and positive energy and message. I think pop music haven't been really on the tracks at the time. And also in the US, there was a lot of hip hop, a lot of soul, but was not that much pop. So we kept, I mean, timing wise for us was perfect music wise. From a creative point of view, we just stopped listening to the negative thing. We just tried to focus on the positive. And then we were so busy as well, because we were basically traveling around the world 24/7 doing interviews in every corner of the planet. Japan one day, and the US the other day, then Brazil, then Germany, then UK, and then back and forth. So we didn't really have time to follow up all the media either. We had quite, we became a little bit more structured after a while, not just being us four and doing it ourselves. We had obviously the back end of Mega Records, and then of course with Universal and Polygram, and then later on with Arista as well. But of course, the other backside of being very successful hit us quite hard with the incident end of 93 with Jenny, where we had a crazy fan that broke in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To her apartment, to her house with a big knife. And she woke up with a fan holding a knife to her throat. The crazy German fan woman, but she was big woman, and she basically stabbed through the oak door with a knife, and then she woke up with her sitting on her with a knife on her throat, and luckily Jenny can speak a little German because this girl didn't speak any English, and she said, I need to see your mom. And the parents were living upstairs, and the other siblings were not home. They were kind of semi-living with their girlfriend boyfriends. So she was the only child home. And so the fan brings her with a knife on her throat and drags her up the stairs. And then they wake up the mom, and the mom comes out, and she stabs the mom. And she gets the hand up. She puts the knife through the hand and then stabs another time. And then the father wakes up and they could wrestle her down and call the police. But it was a very very traumatic hour of a hostile and violent situation in their home. And this is also a place where she was born. And after having so much success in the world, this is the only safe place you have. And being attacked in your bed, in your home, where you've been basically born in this house, was such a violation of her privacy that was very difficult to handle. And after that moment, our lives went from, wow, it's great to be famous. And it's such a freedom to be famous because you can get in anywhere. And, you know, suddenly we had to have enormous security, really advanced security, bodyguards, a lot of bodyguards, and live in hidden homes and secret addresses, changing names and hotels. And we lived with that security measures for over 10 years because there was a lot of, and this was a fan who loved us. But I mean, if you look at what happened with John Lennon, it was also a fan, right? And in America, it happens quite a lot. I've noticed the last 20 years, there's actually been a lot of attacks by fans in the US specifically. So it's not like it's unique, unfortunately. It happens all the time, but it's very unique for Sweden. And I think it's quite unique for Europe that this happened, especially at that time. So that changed everything for us.
You're listening to Pop, the History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Do you remember the moment you heard about it?
Yeah, I was actually, we were supposed to do some recording. So I didn't live in Gothenburg at that time. I lived in Spain or London. I think I lived in London at that time, but I was in Gothenburg. We were supposed to record something. We just came back from Brazil. We've been touring there. And so I got a phone call in the middle of the night when I heard it. So, and then of course, the first thing that happens when Jenny goes to the police station to take a photo on her with blood on her pyjamas and the intruder and the knife and all that stuff. And some police guy sold this for like, you know, 500 euros to the media. And the next day it was world news. I mean, it was front news everywhere. It was not 93, it was 94 because we were big in America at that time. So it was world news everywhere. CNN, BBC, Fox News, you name it. It was everywhere. And that was the last thing we wanted, was actually pictures with Jenny completely in blood in the morning. But that's how media works, right? And also, unfortunately, leaks from police stations as well, everywhere in the world. I was just surprised they did it from Sweden because here we normally have a little bit more control over these things. But it just changed our lives completely after that day. Yeah, but we decided to continue, which was good. It was very strong of Jenny to be able to handle this because it was not that we had time to take a 6 month break here. We're just in completely middle of a promotion tour, next album, touring, blah, blah, blah. So there was just the show must go on. But she still she's still working on the issue still today, 30 years later almost.
I mean, I remember reporting on the story on MTV News and it being a totally shocking story that I'd never reported on something so shocking before. And clearly that was a moment where it, as you said, it changed the band forever. And in essence, I presume it was, even though the band carried on for a while, it was in essence the beginning of the end for the band. Were you aware immediately that this was it in terms of long term?
No, not at that time, because we were so focused on doing our jobs. And basically it's a little bit like you are in water up to here to the nose, and you kind of, you don't have the millimeters, you don't have any margins in anything. We were so much into trying to do our best in for all the record companies that were dragging us around the world, and also to tour, and also to create new music for the next album and the next album after that. So we kind of didn't see it coming. But it's you're completely right. This is actually the beginning of the end, even though that end lasted for quite some time. But it did change the band a lot, and it did change Malin especially, this specific event that she, because she was not very happy traveling with us from the beginning. And the more pressure she got and the more pressure the band got, the more distance she wanted to be from the band. But she was kind of the main singer in the band. And also, especially when we hit in America, Clive Davis wanted her to really front the band much more. We knew the problems that she did not want to front the band. We wanted Jenny to front much more, but Clive didn't accept that. So he completely recut the videos in America. So we only saw Marlon suddenly. And that was the last thing we wanted to do. So she got even more focus. And then when this accident happened, or this violation happened, of course, this didn't really help Marlon's state of mind either, of being a pop star. And she didn't want to speak about her life. And she didn't like, she's had a lot of integrity. And for her, this was definitely the sign for her to, I don't really like this at all. I want to get out. So, I mean, she wanted to leave the band already end of 93, but we kind of begged her to stay in the band. So I think there's a few reasons why this was the beginning of the end. But we were more focused on the problem with Marlon rather than this specific incident, because there was a lot of incidents, with not this dangerous, of course, but more smaller incidents that was also problematic during the ride.
You mentioned earlier about the influence, or the, you know, that this was a band that brought pop music back to the charts in America at that time. And today, you know, you have people like Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, who cite Ace of Base and your music as being very important to them. How does that make you feel?
Well, incredible proud, of course. It's just, these are amazing, talented stars, artists, songwriters. And I also actually share their music. I love their music. I listen to their music. I'm very flattered to see that they have taken our sound and developed it and made it their own and done something else. This is what we call evolution in music and evolution in culture. So I'm very happy and flattered for it. And of course, our Swedish producers and songwriters, like Max Martin, for example, have done an enormous, fantastic job of holding this Swedish pop phenomena alive for so many years. And then he was obviously the protege from Dennis Pop, and now from Max Martin, we have Shellback and all these other guys taking over. So it's kind of a never-ending production of Swedish songwriters and producers coming out still today, which is amazing. I'm very proud of the whole ecosystem that we created here in Sweden, in Stockholm.
Now, I know that Ace of Base went on, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to ignore that part because we're sort of running out of time. And then, you know, you had two other different singers, you had a hiatus, you've had the comebacks and so on and so forth. But you yourself went into tech, didn't you? And you are now an investor in tech. What does that give you that creating music didn't?
Well, I think tech and music for me always have been married, because we worked with tech and computers and, of course, synthesizers, samplers all our lives. So that's a natural part of tech. And as we discussed earlier, when I was a young kid programmer, so I was always excited about the tech industry. And in the mid-90s, I started to be involved with a few music tech companies, and more as an investor. And then, of course, we had the famous dot-com crash 2000. And then I was a little bit confused. Is this completely a dream that this should work or not? But of course, as we see today, that we were not wrong. We were just too early at that time. But I got involved very early on with tech. I was very excited about it. And I founded a lot of companies, especially within the music tech industry. Amongst those, one company, it's an ed tech company that we work together with Gibson to teach people to learn how to play guitar. But for me, this is is another way of getting my creative nerve to work and get my crazy ideas out when I work with these different, especially with app technologies. But I'm laying much more and more into impact investments as well. So we're doing a big project, a few projects in Africa to help entrepreneurs become more, get the tools and the education they need in South Africa and Kenya and Rwanda and so forth. So that's something it's really close to my heart to take my experience with the music and also with the tech and try to help different societies outside of Europe.
Oh, just one final question. Are you still in contact with Jonas, Jenny and Marlin?
I'm in contact with Jonas. Marlin, I haven't seen for... Actually, I spoke about this with someone a few days ago. I don't even remember when I saw Marlin last time, but it probably is soon as 20. I haven't seen it for 18 years at least. Jenny, I meet once in a while in Gothenburg. We go with our kids to the big fun field there called Liseberg. We meet and we do some rides together. We don't really have regular contact. Jonas and I, we do speak on the phone normally a few times a year, sometimes more intense when there's something that's going on. Because I do work very actively with the band. We work with a documentary now, and we're doing a lot of syncs with the movies and remixes, and I'm working with a lot of different universities and schools and so forth with the band. So sometimes I need to have Jonas on board on these projects. But he's very, very happy to be in Gothenburg, and Marlin is in Gothenburg, and Jenny is in Gothenburg. So we don't really interact too much, just only when we have to interact. I think we all have different interests. They all like a silent life, and I'm kind of the opposite. I like to travel. I have my adventures around the world, and kind of traveling the same way as I did during the band days.
Sounds fabulous. Well, listen, it's wonderful to talk to you, and I'm really happy that you seem happy and content in your life, and you achieved so much in terms of music, and I'm sure you're going to achieve as much in the tech area. So Ulf Ekberg, thank you, and hope to see you again soon, maybe in a bar in Gothenburg, but you're in Stockholm.
Yeah, hopefully.
That doesn't make sense. I will be going to Stockholm, so I'll see you there.
It's so nice to just hear your voice. It brings back so many good memories. So it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Steve.
And that was it for the interview with Ulf from Ace of Base. I hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.